in 2028, the next human being to step out of a spacecraft and onto the desolate, dusty surface of the moon will be wearing a spacesuit designed by the exact same Italian luxury house that makes, you know, $3,000 leather handbags.
Which is just a wild sentence to even say out loud.
It really is. But it's true. We're pulling from the June 8, 2026 edition of the Ticken Morning Tech Newsletter. And, well, that Prada Lunar collaboration is just one piece of a completely stacked lineup we are looking at today.
Yeah, it's a huge week for tech news.
Right. And we know you want to stay smart on this rapidly shifting landscape without, you know, drowning in the endless flood of daily updates, which is exactly why we're bringing you this deep dive.
Exactly.
Our mission today is to decode the hidden strategies of the world's biggest brands. We are going to look at how companies are completely rewriting their playbooks to secure your loyalty.
And they're getting incredibly creative with it.
Oh, absolutely. Whether that means banking heavily on your childhood nostalgia or outfitting your eventual lunar landing or even deploying autonomous AI to just run your computer for you. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Starting with how tech giants are physically anchoring you to their brand, especially as the digital landscape completely shifts under our feet.
Right, because this is a massive problem for these companies right now. I mean, as physical media vanishes and cloud gaming makes traditional console hardware less central to the actual playing experience,
the ecosystem tie-in becomes really fragile.
Exactly. If you don't need a specific plastic box sitting under your television to play a game, well, brand loyalty can just evaporate overnight.
Which perfectly explains Microsoft's incredibly loud play at their 2026 showcase.
Oh, the new console.
Yeah, they just unveiled the Xbox Series X25 Limited Edition, which is launching this November. And I saw the press photos. And I got to say, if you are a gamer of a certain age, this design just hits you right in the chest.
It really plays on those memories.
Yeah. It does. It's a fully transparent neon green body.
Yeah.
You can actually see all the internal components, which is so reminiscent of those old translucent electronics from the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, they've clearly engineered it as a cultural artifact, right?
Right.
Rather than just a functional gaming machine.
Right.
And beyond the aesthetics, which, by the way, includes an illuminated green X logo that actually mimics the original 2001 sci-fi startup sound.
Oh, wow. It has the sound.
It has the sound. And the hardware underneath is fully up to standard Series X performance specs. So it features a 1 terabyte SSD and a matching translucent green controller. But the pricing strategy is what really reveals the actual business play here.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, analysts are pegging this at a $599 to $649 price point, which is significantly above the standard $499 unit.
Wow. So they are essentially banking on the fact that the 30 to 45-year-old demographic just has the disposable income to eat that premium.
Yes, purely for the sake of nostalgia.
That is wild.
But it works. They are looking directly at Sony's playbook from December 2024. Remember when Sony released that PlayStation 5 30th Anniversary Edition?
Oh, the beautiful gray PS1-inspired design.
Exactly. It vanished from digital storefronts in minutes, and it immediately commanded 3 to 4 times its retail value on the secondary market.
It is insane.
Well, the broader gaming collectible market is booming right now. It's sitting at around $50 billion. And market research indicates that 40% of gamers in that specific older demographic are, well, they're willing to pay massive premiums for hardware that connects to their formative experiences.
So Microsoft knows cloud computing is the future of game delivery, but they still want to sell you a $600 museum piece for your living room shelf.
Exactly. Just to maintain that physical, emotional tether to the Xbox brand.
But, you know, that physical tether is really only half the strategy, because at the exact same showcase, they completely upended their software distribution model.
The Atlas announcement.
Yes. Atlas finally revealed Persona 6. People have been waiting a decade for this game, and the metrics are just staggering. The trailer pulled 146,000 views in its first 2 hours.
Which is massive.
It entirely eclipsed flagship, homegrown Microsoft titles like Gears of War E-Day.
The reception was phenomenal, for sure. But the distribution model is the real story here.
Right.
Atlas confirmed Persona 6 is launching day one on Xbox Game Pass alongside standard retail releases for PC and the PS5.
And they also dropped a quick note that a full remake, Persona 4 Revival, is hitting Game Pass in February 2027.
Right. So Microsoft is playing such a fascinating double game here.
It really is a double game. Right. On one hand, they want to sell you a highly constrained premium physical box.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they are rendering that box kind of irrelevant by putting a massive system-selling hit like Persona 6 on a subscription service.
A service you can access from a smart TV or just a laptop.
Exactly. So, I mean, how does spending an absolute fortune to secure a day one launch for a Japanese role-playing game on a subscription service actually pay off for them?
Well, it fundamentally alters the math of a $180 billion multi-platform market. Historically, PlayStation has held an iron grip on the JRPG genre.
Right, it was a cornerstone of their ecosystem.
Exactly. But a title like Persona 5 historically caps out around 3 to 5 million hardcore fans. By integrating with Game Pass, which currently commands about 34 million subscribers, Atlus dramatically widens the top of its funnel.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, they can potentially reach 10 to 15 million players, particularly in Western markets where the Xbox ecosystem is deeply entrenched.
So for Microsoft, they get to break a major Sony monopoly.
And for Atlus, locking into a single platform exclusivity deal just leaves too much money on the table. I mean, the development costs for modern titles are just way too high to artificially restrict your audience like that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But speaking of development costs, this concept of engineering massive high-margin revenue streams upfront-like before a game is even widely adopted, it's bleeding into how companies are packaging the software itself.
You're talking about the Fable announcement.
Yes. Playground Games just announced Fable Order of the Hero. It's this massive story DLC focusing on an ancient cult in a new region of Albion.
Right.
But the catch is that the main game doesn't even launch until February 23, 2027. We are 8 months out, yet they are already selling this DLC as part of a $100 premium edition.
Yeah, or you wait and buy it separately for $20 to $30 late next year in Q3 or Q4.
And the community reaction has been intensely polarized. I mean, players look at a day one announcement of post-launch content and immediately suspect the base game was intentionally carved up to extract more money from the consumer.
It's a very common reaction.
I actually have to push back on this industry trend on behalf of you, the listener, because it just feels incredibly cynical.
How so?
I keep thinking about this like building a massive skyscraper. You hire the architects and the steelworkers to build the core structure. But this DLC model feels like the developer is telling you the building is finished while simultaneously charging you extra for the penthouse suite they deliberately left off the blueprints just to sell it to you later.
That's a strong comparison.
It feels like ordering a three-course meal and the waiter preemptively charging you extra for the dessert they already baked. Why announce this now and risk the consumer backlash before the game is even out?
Well, your skyscraper analogy actually perfectly highlights the mechanics of modern game development, but it points to a slightly different conclusion.
Really?
Yeah. When a studio spends 5 to 7 years building a AAA title, the entire team isn't working on the same things at the same time. The architects of your skyscraper, so the concept artists, the narrative designers, the core level builders, they finish their primary work years before the game actually ships.
Oh, I see.
Right. The final 2 years of development are heavily focused on the electricians and decorators, to use your analogy.
So the bug testers, the optimization engineers, the quality assurance teams.
Exactly. So the creative team is essentially sitting on their hands while the technical team finishes the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. To keep a studio of 500 people actively employed and funded, production on the DLC literally has to begin while the base game is still in its final polishing phases.
So they need the funding to keep the lights on for those teams.
Playground Games insists this new region of Albion is being developed sequentially by those freed up teams. Now, the historical skepticism is totally warranted. We've seen publishers like EA face massive backlash over games like Mass Effect 3 comes to mind, where crucial narrative components really felt excised for DLC.
Right, right.
But the reality of a modern production pipeline dictates this kind of staggered development.
Okay, but how is the average person supposed to navigate that? I mean, how do you know if you're funding a sequential development pipeline or just paying a ransom for cut content?
The most practical approach, just completely ignore the $100 premium edition pre-order.
Fair enough.
Yeah, let the main game launch in February 2027. Wait a week and read the consensus. If the base game provides a robust, self-contained 40 to 50 hour narrative experience, then the DLC represents a genuine expansion of that universe.
And if it doesn't?
If the final act feels abrupt or underbaked, then the developer broke the social contract and you protected your wallet by waiting.
Let them prove the foundation is solid before you pay for the penthouse.
Yeah.
I like that. It makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Now, this strategy of pushing extreme premium pricing in highly constrained exclusive environments isn't just happening in virtual fantasy worlds.
No, it's not.
It is literally leaving the planet.
You're talking about the Artemis the fourth moon mission in 2028.
Yes. This is humanity's first return to the lunar surface in over half a century, organized by NASA and Axiom Space.
An incredible milestone.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Their lead designer for the inner spacesuit is Prada.
Prada, yeah.
I look at this and immediately think of the 1960s Apollo missions.
Huh.
Omega developed the Speedmaster watch for those astronauts, and it transcended being just a piece of equipment.
Oh, absolutely.
It became an absolute cultural icon that Omega still leverages to sell watches today. But a watch is an accessory. Prada is designing the LCVG, the liquid cooling and ventilation garment. This is the critical inner layer of the actual spacesuit.
And the stakes are infinitely higher than a timepiece. The lunar environment is spectacularly hostile.
I can only imagine.
Astronauts are dealing with temperature fluctuations swinging from negative 173 degrees Celsius in the shadows to a blistering positive 127 degrees Celsius in direct sunlight.
That is unfathomable. So what exactly is a luxury fashion house doing engineering a life support garment for a literal spaceship?
Mm.
I mean, how does making runway fashion translate to surviving a 200-degree temperature swing?
It actually comes down to elite material science and specialized manufacturing techniques that traditional aerospace contractors genuinely struggle with.
Really? Aerospace contractors struggle with this?
Yeah. The LCVG requires dual liquid cooling tubes, which constantly circulate chilled water and integrated ventilation channels to manage body heat during 6 to 8 hour spacewalks.
Okay.
Historically, integrating these systems results in heavy, rigid, bulky undergarments that severely restrict joint mobility.
Which is dangerous on the moon.
Very. But Prada, however, has spent decades pioneering seamless knitting technologies and advanced composite fabrics for high fashion athletic compression wear.
Mm.
Yeah, they know exactly how to weave rigid thermal management tubing into a highly flexible ergonomic garment, one that distributes weight perfectly across the human body without restricting movement. NASA needed advanced textile engineering, and Prada already possessed the patents and the looms.
So they aren't just slapping a logo on a NASA schematic. They are bringing fundamentally superior textile mechanics to the table.
Exactly. But the underlying business logic here points toward the commercialization of the cosmos. Well, Axiom Space isn't just facilitating Artemis. They are laying the groundwork for the commercial space tourism era of the 2030s.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Right. When an ultra-high net worth individual pays $50 million for a ticket to orbit, they're going to expect an experience commensurate with that price tag.
They won't want to wear a utilitarian standard-issue government suit.
Exactly. Axiom wants to offer a bespoke, luxury-branded experience. And for Prada, establishing themselves as the premier outfitter for the vacuum of space generates a narrative worth billions in future brand equity down here on Earth.
So we are looking at autonomous, highly engineered, luxury life support systems to keep humans alive in physical space.
Basically, yes.
Let's bring it back down to Earth, though, because a completely different kind of autonomous system is fundamentally changing how we interact with our computers. The Taken Morning Report highlights that OpenAI is radically transforming ChatGPT from a conversational chatbot into a full-blown super app.
And this is the critical inflection point of the decade.
It really feels like it.
The president of OpenAI recently declared that the chatbot era is over. We are officially entering the era of AI agents.
So what is the mechanical difference there? Because to a lot of people, an AI is an AI.
It's a huge difference. A chatbot is a passive text generator. You ask it a question, it predicts the most logical sequence of words to form an answer, and it prints that text on your screen.
Right, but you still have to take that text and do the actual work.
Exactly. An AI agent, conversely, has read and write access to external systems. It doesn't just tell you how to do something, it executes the multi-step task autonomously.
Which explains the integrations they are announcing. They are natively integrating Codex, which is their AI model, specifically trained to write and parse computer code, alongside partnerships with platforms like Canva and Booking.com.
Right.
So an agent isn't just drafting an itinerary for a trip to Rome. It is navigating the Booking.com API, inputting your credit card, and securing the reservation without you ever even opening a browser tab.
And that transition from passive text generation to active execution completely rewrites their valuation model.
Because they can monetize the execution.
Exactly. OpenAI is positioning itself for a massive IPO, likely in late 2026 or early 2027. If they remain a simple $20 a month subscription service, their revenue ceiling is capped.
Sure.
But if they pivot to a marketplace commission structure, taking a fractional cut of every Canva design purchased or every hotel booked through their agents, they instantly demonstrate diversified, highly scalable revenue.
Wow.
They are aiming for an $80 to $100 billion valuation based on becoming the central executing layer of the internet.
But that creates a massive collision course with their biggest backer.
Microsoft.
Microsoft. At their Build 2026 conference, Microsoft announced Intelligent Terminal 0.1. It's a fork of the Windows Terminal, and crucially, they are releasing it under an MIT open source license.
Which is a huge deal.
It features a dedicated AI agent pane built right into the command line, with native GitHub Copilot support. They are explicitly trying to position Windows as the ultimate AI agent operating system.
By open sourcing the terminal under an MIT license, Microsoft is aggressively trying to capture developer mindshare. They want software engineers building agents directly within the Windows ecosystem rather than inside a web browser.
This is where I have to stop and look at the math.
Yeah.
Because the contradiction here is just glaring.
It is.
Microsoft invested $13 billion into OpenAI. They own 49% of the company.
Right.
But if OpenAI wants ChatGPT to be this standalone super app where users handle all their coding, scheduling, and design, why would enterprise customers ever pay for Microsoft 365 Copilot? Aren't they suddenly building heavily competing ecosystems?
You've just described the defining technological friction of 2026. The tension revolves entirely around architectural advantages.
Break that down for me.
Well, Microsoft has an OS-level advantage. An AI agent embedded into the Windows operating system inherently has root access to your local files, your deeply nested enterprise data, and your system hardware.
Okay, that's powerful.
But OpenAI has an application-level advantage. Their super app exists in the cloud, completely unconstrained by which operating system you happen to be using, making it infinitely more portable.
Right, you can use it on your phone, your Mac, or wherever.
Exactly. Both companies understand that whoever controls the foundational agentic platform, the layer that actually executes the physical tasks for the user, controls the economic future of computing.
So they are allies on paper,
yeah,
but they are sprinting toward the exact same throne.
Precisely.
It makes you wonder how long a $13 billion partnership can survive when the core product roadmaps are mutually exclusive.
It will likely force a massive strategic realignment, or a fundamental renegotiation of how revenue is shared between the local operating system and the cloud-based executing agent.
Okay, looking at the overarching narrative we've traced today,
mm-hmm.
It is just incredible how coordinated these strategies are across entirely different sectors.
It really is all connected.
Yeah. Microsoft is selling transparent, neon green nostalgia to maintain a physical anchor in a world shifting to cloud gaming. Prada is leveraging elite material science to outfit the next generation of ultra-wealthy space tourists. And OpenAI and Microsoft are quietly going to war over who gets to build the autonomous agent that books your flights and writes your code.
It's a race for ecosystem dominance.
Exactly. Every single one of these massive entities is aggressively trying to build an inescapable, highly monetized ecosystem around you.
The through line is that technology is moving away from being a tool you pick up and put down. Instead, it is becoming the ambient infrastructure of your daily routine.
Which is a huge shift.
It is. But if we project this trajectory just a few years forward, it raises a rather profound question.
What's that?
If our digital assistants are now autonomously booking our travel, designing our presentations, and executing our code, and our gaming ecosystems are pre-selling us virtual adventures months before the developers have even finished building them, at what point do we stop being the users of technology and simply become the audience to our own automated lives?
Wow. That is an incredibly heavy, slightly terrifying, but absolutely necessary question to sit with as these tools get more capable. And, you know, exploring the mechanics behind those shifts is exactly why we do this.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the rapidly changing world around you. Keep looking for the underlying playbooks, and we will catch you next time.